This is tape 3, side B now. What do you do for fun and leisure? How do you relax?
So right now, because my girlfriend's so much into gardening, I usually help her doing gardening. But what we like to do include birding and hiking. And in winter, we like skiing a lot. Mm-hmm. And also when in San Francisco, in summer, we often go to beaches and read books and just have a nap on the beach. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And once a year, at least, we have a camping trip for a week or so. We have to sleep in a tent for a while every mm-hmm. year. Mm-hmm. Just to, otherwise we're going to go nuts, I think.
Right. How did you get into birding?
Oh, she started that when we were both in vet school in Japan. Right. Because I actually don't know why she started it. Maybe because there's so many birds around. And also in Hokkaido, which is northern part of Japan, you can see a lot of birds that you don't see in any other places. I think. And I was sort of dragged into birding by her.
And where do you hike around? Do you hike around here? Or just
yes. So one great thing about Seattle is after, I don't know, 30 minutes drive, you can go to reasonable mountains. So we take I-90 very often and hike up. In winter, last year we discovered snowshoeing, mm-hmm. which is real fun. Mm. We do that too, or sometimes we do cross-country skis. So those are things that we really like to do.
Yeah. If you would, describe a typical work day from the time that you get up to the time that you go to bed.
Okay, so I get up at 8 or 9, and it takes me a bit of time to be sort of conscious, but then take shower and eat breakfast and come to the lab and usually talk to students or technicians who have technical troubles or something like that. If not, I go straight to my computer, check my email and write response. And if nothing else is there, I usually start doing my experiments right away. Or talk to students for the experiments. Then I don't eat lunch usually, so I work through afternoon and go back home for dinner between 7 and 9. And I usually come back in, I don't know, somewhere between 40 and 60 minutes. Then stay here until midnight or 1 o'clock. Very often I do a lot of thinking and reading at night when I'm not doing experiments. Yeah, that's about it. It's very simple. And in the meantime, if I have things to write, for example, when I'm writing paper or writing grant, I do a lot of writing at night because I'm alone usually.
Right.
Yeah.
Is this the time too, at the end of the day, when you read, you have that pile of books beside your bed, or?
Oh, what? Yes. After I go home, I read every day. I have hundreds of books at home, so then I usually fall asleep reading something.
Right.
Then I get up. That's a cycle. It's a real simple life.
All right. Assess, if you would, your efforts so far in achieving your professional goals. How are you doing?
I think I'm doing all right. First couple of years, maybe 3 years, I was publishing, but I was not that happy about what we have been doing. We were doing. It's not that I was unhappy, but I knew what we were doing was not at the level I wanted it to be. We're basically doing very simple things, knock out some genes and see phenotypes. There's no creativity there. But I knew that that's something we have to do. We had to do to come to the next level. The last year or so, we have started doing kind of experiments I wanted to do, so I'm pretty happy about that. So in that sense, I think we are doing reasonably fine, even though I really hope that the new direction I was talking about will pan out, and that was my summer project. And I am getting some interesting results, so I'm very hopeful about that. Mm-hmm.
Again, assess your efforts so far, but in achieving your personal goals.
Personal goals. So, that's a tough question. I actually don't have a real set goal. I just want to do good science. It's in that sense, and I want to be happy. And in that sense, I'm doing fine, I think. So science is, I don't talk about this kind of thing when I'm not drunk usually, but
we can accommodate you. I can go out and get some sake or something. There we go.
So science is the way I like. Science is what I like to do. That's, and I'm very happy to do it. But it's also, I don't know how to say. So yeah, this is the best job. I really like it. But my real goal that I set a while ago when I was in, I don't know, I was doing postdoc, or I don't remember why I set this goal, personal side, is to be a person who can be completely free from prejudice or what society wants me to do or something like that. So I want to be a person who can judge, make decisions on everything I do in my life. And I want to be a person who do everything in the way I think should be done.
Right.
Because whatever we do is influenced by other things, prejudice or wrong information that I get from outside, whatever. And of course, it's impossible to be like that. That's why it's a good goal to have, because once you have achieved the goal, your life is done. In that sense, I don't think I'm there yet at all. So I still have to work on it.
Right. It sounds like total freedom, but freedom from both external and internal restraints.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Or, well, internal is fine, I think. If I want to do the things that I think are right to me, and I want to rely on my own judgment to do anything, or I want to be the person who can judge things, I should say, not because this news said this or that, or not because my neighbor said this or that, to have some internal standard for a lot of things, that'll be a kind of person I want to be.
Right. Now, you've already mentioned more or less where you want to take the lab, I think, or where the lab, you see the lab going, say, in the next 2 or 3 years. But how about in 10 years? Do you still see yourself as a principal investigator?
Yeah, I think so. I'll be a little surprised if I was not. Mm-hmm. I cannot think of other things to do. I can be a teacher, I think. I found that I like teaching quite a bit. But the joy I get, pleasure I get from research is so strong that it's a little hard for me to think about me doing anything else. In case I don't make it here to be a full member, maybe I'll find other jobs somewhere that I can do research, mm-hmm. pretty sure.
It brings up the question of tenure. I mean, does Hutchinson have something like tenure here?
We don't have tenure, actually. We got rid of it about the time I joined. Not because I joined faculty member, right. I think. But so one thing that was outrageous, I thought, is that they took away tenure from people who already had it. Ooh, which is unheard of, because everybody voted for it.
Right.
So basically, this place has a 5-year renewal thing. So even after being promoted to full member, you have to have external evaluation every 5 years. And it's basically supposed to be as strict as tenure evaluation, I mean, full member evaluation.
Right.
And I don't know of a single person who needed to go be out because of that. But I think that's what DigiCert introduced to keep this place active.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's only fair because we do so little other than research. So we don't really provide any service. It's not like state school where people can actually teach and sort of contribute to the university by teaching. So in this place, if you don't do research well, you shouldn't be here. So mm-hmm. I thought it's a good idea.
Right.
Even though I was not a part of voting process, I would have voted yes strongly if I were there. And but you have to be promoted to full member by 10th year or end of 10th year, I think, something like that.
So you're what? You're on your sixth year then?
Here. I am on sixth year, right. And I was promoted to associate member, I don't remember, almost 2 years ago, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Or a year and a half, something like that. So maybe in a few years I have to go through the process.
Right. Okay. I'm gonna check. All right, that does that part of it at least, the question set. Let's turn to public policy questions. And there was a question on patents. Do you have any patents?
Nope.
Okay. And what is your own view of the patent issue in science? I know that there are a group of people who feel, of course, that it blocks or it hinders the flow of information in science. Other people feel that it's a completely valid way for people to get to recoup some of the investment made on their research.
Yeah, so I have a mixed feeling about it. So traditionally, I was against making money out of research. I think this is, I'm influenced by Japanese tradition that scholars are supposed to be pure and poor. I mean, they're not supposed to go after money. And I still have that feeling. But at the same time, because of that, I know Japanese research in Japan has suffered because the industry and academia are separated so much. And in this country, big part of drive is coming from collaboration between industry and academia or from industry themselves. So in Japan, they try to integrate this collaboration between academia and industry. And of course, that brings to things like, you know, PIs discovering something, establishing a company, or selling that right to companies and make money out of it. If I discovered something, I'd be happy if that money is used by the Hutch to help this institute. I'm not sure I'll do anything else. It's not that I look down people who do it, but for myself, I don't want to be bothered by money, I think. But I do understand some people want to make money out of their discoveries because they work hard. But then the fact that they are usually supported by public funds, how to make it, it's a gray area. Of course, if there was no NIH or NSF grant, most of people probably couldn't have come up with that. I actually don't even know what the system is. So it would be probably ideal if there's a system that they pay back a little bit, part of their income to the funding source. Then they can take some for them, either for themselves or for the institution they belong to. In a way they choose. And how much should be returned to the institution is something that probably someone has to come up with.
Mm-hmm. I read recently where about two-thirds of the biomedical research R&D comes from industry now.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that's a good or a bad trend?
It's
a fact regardless, but is it a good fact, I guess?
I don't know. Let's see. if that reflects the lack of funding from public institutions, it's a bad thing. If that's because industry is so wealthy that they're willing to invest money for research, that's a good thing. Mm. So I'm not really answering your question, I think. But from my point of view, NIH funding, you know, it can go up or down, but has been quite good. So I think it's probably closer to the second case, that it's not due to lack of funding from NIH. And to be honest, it's a little hard for me to imagine NIH keep increasing this fund, this scale of funding right now. So if that's the case, that a lot of researchers can get alternative funding from outside is not necessarily a bad thing. Of course, all the fundings from industries have strings attached. So how strict that is, how much that affects their research, I just don't know the detail. So having funds is a good thing as long as it doesn't disturb the research, because I think I believe strongly that the basic research, the knowledge coming from basic research should be freely shared by other researchers. Mm-hmm. And if you cannot do that because it's string attached, it's a bad thing, no matter how much money it's available. And of course, I understand you cannot make it, you know, freely available to every single person. But that's one thing we have to be extremely careful about.
Right. This is where maybe those collaborations would be useful. When you give, I think this is happening, you give information, say, in industry, selectively to certain universities that you have some agreement mm-hmm. with or whatever.
Yeah.
That might work.
And I think the big issue came when Human Genome Project, I mean, Sequence came out. And I know some people resigned from science because science accepted paper without guarantee that human genome sequence will be freely available. And that was unfortunate that it happened. You cannot just take advantage of the system without sharing the standard in the community.
Yeah.
That's the biggest concern for me.
Mm-hmm.
Availability of information.
Right. When you mentioned strings attached, you were talking about, I think, industry grants, let's say. But I was thinking, too, this is a question I should have asked earlier, you know, with the grant that you get from the NIH, does the source of your funding inform or shape the kind of research that you do?
Oh, you mean whether we are restricted to what we wrote in application?
Right. How closely do you include
that? Yeah, in theory should be, but we know how to handle that flexibly, because everybody knows it's hard to predict what we would be doing in 5 years. So we come up with the best ideas or the ideas that sound best. In reality, NIH does not like to fund projects that are too risky. So when we write the NIH grant, we try to come up with experiments that sound interesting but also doable.
Mm-hmm.
And in reality, we get excited about something and come up with crazy experiments, sort of hit, you know, home run or strike out kind of experiments, and we do that often. And if you happen to have a hit, that can change direction completely. The good thing about NIH is then if you actually change direction quite a bit, you can say that in update, annual report, that you, because of this, we decided to change your direction, and it's usually accepted.
Right.
So it's not too bad at all.
Where do your ideas come from?
That's I don't think it comes from one place. Very often I come up with ideas when I am talking with other people, other students, other PIs. Sometimes it just happens. I can be doing, I can be taking a shower, I can be reading something, maybe when I'm hiking. It just happens. It's hard to say. Mm-hmm. But it, it's easy to think things straight when I'm explaining something to people. So that happens a lot. I'm explaining something to my student, then come up with one experiment. Or when I'm preparing for, another thing is when I'm preparing for my talk, presentations, or seminars, I have to think about my project from the beginning to the end. And then sometimes that sort of probably activates some part of my brain that I come up with some new experiments. That happens a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Or when I go to meetings and talk to other people and from exchange of ideas, or sometimes get ideas from other people's presentation, that also happens often. I cannot tell which one happens to me most. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a little bit hard.
Can scientific creativity be cultivated?
I think so. Here, for example, at the Hutch, it's very clear that people don't count the number of papers. And when I was on, so when we were trying to hire someone, it was very impressive that the people repeatedly asked whether this candidate has come up with something new, new ideas or a new method, or new something, how creative that person was. And it was great. I mean, it's scary and good, I think. Though if it's very clear that all the senior faculty members only care about number of papers, probably junior faculty members get pressured to publish a lot. And unless the person is extraordinarily good, it's probably difficult to be creative and write a lot of papers at the same time. Because to do creative experiments, you sometimes very often have to think a lot, and the experiments tend to be hard and high risk. So it's rare that things go very fast.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that people care only more about creativity than number of papers, we have, and knowing that the culture of this place, we have sort of luxury of doing that kind of work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's definitely influenced by culture in this place. So I think it's possible to create a system or environment to facilitate creative work. And of course, having creative colleagues help us too.
Yeah.
Because once a week, we have this faculty meeting Friday, and this all science, no administration, and everybody talks, gives 1 hour talk once a year, and you exactly know what's going on in the other lab. And if a lot of people talk about creative work, you also, number one, get pressure to do in creative work, and also you get stimulation, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good thing. Unless you're truly creative, you probably have to make effort to do creative work, so that helps, I think.
Mm-hmm. Did you take any history of science classes when
No.
you were going through? No.
No. I like to know about history, so I sometimes read books about history of sciences, but I don't think I took anything formal.
Right. Do you think that history of science classes or a class would be beneficial to upcoming scientists?
I think so, yeah. I wish I had something like that as an option. I guess so. To see how personal science can be, or what it takes to have breakthrough, for example, that may be an interesting thing to go through.
Mm-hmm.
It may be a hard class to teach, but I know that our graduate program a couple of years ago tried to set up our journal club in that way, come up with two papers that are 5 to 10 years apart. First paper predicted some future, and second paper sort of follow-up of that. Mm-hmm. To sort of show students history within like one field.
Right.
You know, it was believed in this way 5 years ago, and then after that this happened. kind of thing. I thought it was a good idea.
Mm-hmm. A question about serendipity. What is the role of serendipity in your research?
I'm sorry, I don't know the term.
Oh, serendipity, chance, I guess, chance discoveries. So what is the role of chance discoveries?
It's big, I think. Of course, you have to be prepared to make that discovery, because I'm sure we all miss those chances. So you got to be prepared to grab that chance. But for example, my discovery I made when I was a postdoc, ATP-dependent chromatin remodeling factor, as I said, I don't think I could have done that if I were there 2 years before or 2 years after that. So something like that happens, I think. Mm-hmm. So it is big. But if you constantly try hard, it's something that you can get sooner or later.
Yeah, the odds improve.
Yeah.
It'll get in your favor. Yeah. What effect has technology and technological innovation had on your science?
Oh, it's big. Especially because I do work in yeast. It's been a sort of model organism for molecular genetics. So I took full advantage of Genome Project first. Then I have been taking advantage of the things that followed up on Genome Project, such as DNA microarray or systematic gene knockout projects. And I'm using robot to introduce my mutants to the collection of mutants that made in genome project. So there are a lot of experiments we are doing right now, which would have been impossible 10 years ago. Hmm. So in biology, I strongly believe that technology is a big part of it, even though it's sometimes necessary but not sufficient, obviously,
right,
to do good science. And of course, if you are caught up on technology too much, you can miss something, and there are a lot of experiments that still can be done. So sometimes you can get too excited about techniques and forget about thinking, but I do think that the technological advancement is a big part of science.
Some people have talked about a divide between, because technology is becoming more and more expensive, between those labs that can afford that technology and those labs that can't. Do you see that divide in the work when you talk to people and go to conferences? Or?
Yes, I think so. So I have been pretty fortunate that this institute has been extremely good at catching up with new technologies. But there are labs that cannot do, for financial reasons, kind of experiments we are doing. But part of the reason why we can do what we do is because, number one, institute works very hard to get funds for those new techniques. But also, we share a lot of things. So we don't have to each buy everything, mm-hmm. because the door is always open, and our robot is used by 5 or 6 different labs, and I use other people's equipment freely, more or less. So there is some room for improvement, even if funds are limited. So hopefully that would facilitate collaboration more than leaving some people out. But I know in reality there are people who don't have access to a lot of new techniques. Mm-hmm. So I can see that happening.
In the new technology, do you find that you have the time and you have, the staff to learn these new technologies?
Yeah.
I know that you do a lot of bench work, so I think your situation maybe is a little bit different.
Yeah, well, even for me, there are some experiments my students are doing that I don't know exactly how things are done in a practical sense. But I like new toys.
Right.
So that helps. And my students have been pretty good at learning new things. I think it's probably also fun for many of them. as long as I convince them how important those experiments are, I think it's not a big problem. I never had a problem convincing my students to do new things. Okay. They're pretty brave in a sense, I think. And so, yeah, I'm sure there are times that things are so complicated that we need to work, hire someone or work with someone who have technologies, but we haven't done that. Mm-hmm. Recently, yeah.
We often hear that there's a biomedical revolution afoot. Do you believe that there is? Are we in the midst of a revolution?
Biomedical revolution?
Like, you know, a complete overhaul or change or transformation of the field, say from this point to maybe 10, 15, even 20 years ago?
I don't necessarily believe that. I think some people might say that because of genomics. Right. To me, genomics are giving us a lot more data to deal with, a lot more things to think about. Whether a lot of experiments will be doable in silico in the near future, I doubt that. Partly because I know most of the things, at least in our field, that are done in genomics have not discovered anything new. Mm-hmm. If you look at a lot of DNA microarray paper, very often they describe something that already known, so it's easy to publish proof of concept. And when they come across something that's not expected or new, they don't have explanation usually because they're not doing experiments, traditional experiments, to figure out what that is. So it's then they end with hand-waving argument usually. Mm-hmm. Now, whether that continues forever, I don't know. Maybe someone will come up with more revolutionary ways to deal with it. One manuscript I'm aware of is by Rick Young at Whitehead at MIT that they got together a lot of cell cycle gene expression regulation data and predicted how cell cycle regulation of transcription is done and proved that the predictions were right for some genes. So they sort of came up with a network of transcription during cell cycle progression. That was pretty new. Whether that kind of thing is applicable for everything, maybe someone will try that. Whether though that changes everything, I doubt it. I still believe that we have to take, if we're going to go deep into the mechanism underlying some observation or disease, whatever, we probably have to take things one by one and figure things out. So, to me, genomics are providing us with new branch of research, not necessarily changing everything altogether. Mm-hmm. That's my feeling. I can be wrong, though.
In this particular system of science that you're a part of, American science, to use sort of a short phrase for it, competition is very important, as you know. It's a big mm-hmm. part of it, whether you're writing articles or applying for grants. Mm-hmm. Is competition a good element in that system?
I think so in general, as long as it's fair competition. Because I'm lazy. if there's no competition, I'm sure I won't work as hard, probably. At least not all the time. And because of the sense of competition, we try to the maximum, I think, well, as hard as we can. Of course, competition sometimes means that you cannot. It's hard to do long-term experiment. But the reason why I think it's good is because I know Japanese system, which is a lot less competitive, and I even know full professors who don't write papers for years. But once they get the position, they won't be fired unless they commit some crime. Mm-hmm. And in theory, Japanese system should allow people to think in long term and do experiments that U.S. scientists cannot do, that may be high risk or may take too long a time for NIH to support. They can even do experiments that take 20 years if they want to, because their job is guaranteed, basically. Their salary is guaranteed by the government, so they don't have to have grant to be paid. Mm-hmm. So they can live without absolutely any grant, no problem, if they don't have to do expensive research. So, but in reality, I know almost nobody does that kind of work, because they don't have to work, they don't work. Mm-hmm. So I know competition is necessary in a sense. Whether this is too competitive, I don't know. But still, there are some rooms to do research that not so many people are doing, so I don't think so. So I think it's about right now.
Without mentioning names, do you know of instances where facts were fudged or papers were maybe published too soon because of the competitive attempt?
I actually had recently a situation that I talked about our new stuff, and someone came up to me that, one of my colleagues had the same story. That was from Japan. And this turned out to be pretty good. So I talked to that guy, I emailed him, and he called me, and he was very open about how he came up with this project, and there was very good reason. It's not like he jumped on it directly. And we had our own reason to work on it, and he even sent me a preprint, and he told me the paper is under review, and later he told us this is in press. But then I got back to him saying, you know, maybe you should change this and that. He took many of those, and I asked him to cite as unpublished or in preparation that we also discovered the same proteins, and he agreed to do it. And I also cited his paper in our paper and sent him our preprint, and then the paper, particular paper, is under review. And of course, if we didn't know about his paper, or if his paper was not coming, we probably didn't write it up at the time and try to make it a bigger story. Mm-hmm. We needed to publish that because his paper was coming out. So in a sense, it was a little unfortunate. But as far as I can tell, everything was done in as fair way as possible, and I'm pretty happy that way he has been honest about and how we communicated. And I ended up with having a new friend because of this, which is probably a little untypical. But if competition is like this, I won't complain. Mm-hmm. The next step, we do our own stuff, and he made it clear that his lab is not following up on this. So I also know have a few competitors, but so when we meet at meetings, we know we're competing, and we try not to reveal everything, and I expect them to do it, and they know that I'm not telling them everything, but we also try not to overlap completely. Mm-hmm. So because we know roughly what kind of direction other labs are going. So it's not been too bad, in a sense.
You've talked, you know, a little bit about collaboration then. That's sort of the flip side of competition. Are you doing collaborations now with scientists?
We're doing some, though I prefer not to worry about other labs all the time. So when I'm asked about the reagents, I usually give them the reagents and just let them do whatever they want to do. And if the stuff we receive are requested are not published, we ask them to put their names on. And if those reagents are published, I said, don't worry about it, just acknowledge. When we get some stuff from other labs, depending on the other end, sometimes they request to be a collaborator, which is not the way it should be. Once it's published, you should be able to use it. But anyway, some people want to be co-author in that sense, as long as it's not outrageous, I say yes. We are having that kind of collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
And for another project, we requested something that we knew are not published, but this person is a friend of mine, and he was nice enough for us to send those things. So we're doing collaboration on that, and we keep informing him what kind of results we get. And this is doable because our interest and his interest are completely different, not overlapping right now.
All right, I think I'll...